Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Marlene couldn't help watching the mother and daughter sitting across from her in the subway. "Now, Candace, you know what this says," the mother coaxed, showing her a little notebook page with something apparently written on it. The little girl made a face. "I can't remember." "You knew it yesterday," her mother pleaded. "Just try a little harder. Sound it out and you'll get it." The little girl laboriously sounded out each letter. T-E-L-E-P-H-A-N-E-H. "That's good," said her mother. "Let's review what happens when P and H are together." Marlene could no longer contain her curiosity. "Is your little girl in a spelling bee?" she asked. "No, no," the mother laughed. "We're just getting prepared for second grade. There are so many things kids need to know nowadays to be successful in school." From a parent's perspective, what do our kids need to succeed in school? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're fortunate to have with us today an expert on school success. John Potter has been an educator for the last 35 years and is the founder and director of the New School of Northern Virginia, a progressive non-sectarian school for grades 3 through 12. He is the father of two sons, ages 14 and 15, and two stepchildren, ages 15 and 18. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, John.
Thank you very much, Linda.
For success in school, are there some skills children should enter school with?
I think more than anything else, and I'm not sure even I'd call these skills, but a positive self-esteem, I think, is really crucial. And an ability to think of themselves as problem solvers. If a child thinks of him or herself as a problem solver, then whatever the teacher gives them to do, their attitude is, "Oh, well, let me take a look at this. Let's see. Let me turn it over, look at it," as opposed to, "I can or I can't do that." And parents can make a major contribution to having students come in with that kind of frame of mind.
I love this terminology of the problem solver, but I don't quite know how we help our children develop that.
Well, a lot of that comes from the way the parent and the child interact at home. If a parent, for instance, is apt to say right, wrong, that sort of thing, as opposed to, "Well, let's talk about that. Let's sort of work our way through this or work our way through that," then the child gets the sense that they're invited to participate in solving a problem. One of the things I did a lot with my kids, because I kept my kids at home until they went into kindergarten, and you know, I was aware of the fact that they would need to be able to read to a certain level and they'd need to have some degree of math skill and that kind of thing. The car for me was an incredible opportunity, mm-hmm. because when we take trips, we'd see, oh, New York, 500 miles, and we'd see the miles growing fewer and fewer, and we'd look at the odometer in the car. Now, the interesting thing about an odometer is that it reads out 100.6, 100.7. I never, ever made an effort to explain what the point was at all, but we just talked about it, and it was quite clear that as we went further, it rolled over after 9 to 0, and the next number went up. So simply by that kind of exposure, they began to develop, you know, a sense of what all that meant. And that kind of example can be applied in dozens of different ways. I mean, whether it's a parent looking at a book and saying, "Wow, that's a really interesting looking word," immediately the child wants to look at it and somehow make sense of it, right? So for a parent, I think inviting the child to collaborate, to problem solve, that there's a dialogue which goes not just from the parent to the child, but from the child to the parent. So that's a two-way level of communication, mm-hmm. which feels sort of equal.
So you're really empowering your child to participate.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and to say, "I can do it. I can do it. And if I can't do it, you know, let me try."
What about non-academic skills like tolerating frustration or openness to new experiences?
That obviously comes from the parents as well. And I think bringing children into one kind of a community or another, whether it be, you know, a church community or a local neighborhood community or something like that, where there are other children to interact, where the parents can watch and observe and guide, helps that enormously. Mm-hmm. If the child, for instance, is isolated at home and doesn't have much of a chance to interact, then they're suddenly plunged into a classroom environment or a nursery school environment, whatever it is, with 30 other kids their own age. Suddenly, they're not the only one and not that special anymore, at least in their eyes. So that becomes a challenge.
In his school environment, what kinds of skills besides the basic skills that we sort of think of should a child have to be productive?
When you think of skills, what do you think of? I mean, just I'd like to fire the question back at you for a second.
Okay. Well, I'm standing in for all parents out there listening, but I would think that we talk about reading and writing and numerical skills
as the basics. Right.
And when people are hollering back to basics, that seems to be what they have in mind.
And when it goes beyond that, what first jumps to your mind?
Well, I think what we were talking about as cooperation, to be able to
interact
positively in an environment.
Right. To work collaboratively. To be able to see yourself as a part of a community and to be able to work well within that community. Mm-hmm. To be able to communicate. I mean, communication is a complicated thing. I mean, the school introduces the notion of being able to communicate verbally, to be able to communicate in writing, to be able to interact in those areas, receive sort of criticism, guidance, that kind of thing. So it goes back to this notion of being able to collaborate. I mean, you hear this word collaborate from me from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade. For us, it's a crucial skill. In fact, when I'm talking with students that are coming into the school, I will explain to them very, very carefully that this is a really collaborative environment. Of course, when I say that, they have no clue what I'm talking about. So I have to explain that what to you will seem a very equal relationship between the teachers and the students. You're both committing yourself to your goals. And it's a surprise to students to know that in working in this very equal way with teachers, that their voice is going to be heard, is going to be listened to. And to get them to habitually do that, to develop that as a habit of mind, you know, is one of our primary goals. And we work at this from, you know, where we start in third grade on. And I think all schools would be really well advised to do that, because what that tends to do is to make the students more self-sufficient, is to make them more organized, is to help them work independently. Because when you work collaboratively with someone, you get ideas and you want to develop those ideas. So off you go independently, work on the idea, bring it back. So to us, the collaborative mode is crucial, is really, really important, and empowers the students, adds self-esteem to the student, builds the self-esteem in really important and critical ways.
It gives them ownership of the process of
Absolutely.
Their own education.
Absolutely. With guidance. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't own it and guide it themselves completely, but, you know, we know where we're going and we know where we want them to be.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about school success.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with John Potter, head of the New School of Northern Virginia, about school success. Do you find that when kids come from other schools to this kind of environment, that their skill level increases, that their abilities increase?
That we very self-consciously and intentionally train them in the collaborative skills so that all the other skills follow in the heels of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, our program is a skills-based curriculum as opposed to a, if you like, an information survey-based curriculum, especially in the high school.
Can you explain the difference?
Basically, I mean, the survey-based curriculum essentially says, okay, here's a textbook with all this information in it. You're expected to master that information. And at the end of that, what we're going to do is we're going to test you on it. And however that test transpires at the end of the year or at the end of the semester, whatever it happens to be, that's going to measure how well you've done. Now, ask yourself, what skills does that test? What do you think?
Memorization.
Memorization.
And spitting back.
Exactly. And do we want that? Now, some people do want that, okay? We don't. I mean, that's not where our value lies.
It's not thinking.
It's not thinking. And it's not teaching children to use their minds well, which is what we consider to be extremely important. So with the collaborative environment, teachers and students are batting ideas back and forth all the time. Students having to read, to write, to evaluate, to use evidence to support the point they're trying to make. And ultimately, and we do this all the time, to present publicly the work they've done in answering questions. We have these things we call essential questions, which we attach to courses. And they're open-ended questions, not a right answer, not a wrong answer. Example, we had a course called Jane Austen and Company a couple of years ago. Where students who signed up for it obviously were interested in Jane Austen and what she, and her work. So you might expect that in a course like that they would just study Jane Austen. But what they did was popped in the essential question, how have women's ideas of love and marriage changed since the time of Jane Austen? Mm-hmm. That then involved reading Jane Austen's contemporaries, current authors, to develop some sense of how, in fact, that has happened. And students came to different conclusions about it based on it, but they had to supply the evidence, they had to support it, they had to organize, and that's a really important skill. I mean, you've got to be able to organize, and so many kids struggle with organization. And then at the end, when they present, they're organized, they've collaborated, they've researched, they've worked independently, and now they're communicating. And they can do it in any variety of ways. But they're also, at the end, subject to questioning by the audience. Every single one of our high school students does this, you know, four times a year. And the purpose of the questioning is to give them that confidence they're going to need, whether they go into the sort of business community or whether they go, you know, on to school and graduate school, that kind of thing. And we notice a very, very, very clear development in that self-assurance, that ability to speak clearly, the ability to communicate well, to choose their words, to organize, and so on. So this multitude of skills, therefore, gets really exercised well. The critical question that comes at us after that is often, well, wait a minute, are they getting everything they need? And our answer to that is an interesting one, because when we formed this approach, we went out as a staff to probably eight local universities. And the question we posed was, what does it take for a student to really succeed in your environment? And we didn't give them any lead questions whatsoever. And they fed back to us things like, well, the kids have to be able to research well. They've got to be able to work independently. Can they collaborate? Can they communicate? Which we then adopted. We sort of got together and we met and we sort of looked through all the findings that the staff brought back. And we said, this is what colleges want. This is what they want. So that's what we're going to do. And to make it interesting and sort of riveting for the teachers and for the students, what we're going to do is we're going to give kids some choice in the courses they take. We're going to give teachers some control of what they teach so that they're fired up about what's going on. So you've got an environment now where you've got teachers and students there because they want to be there and doing what they want to do. To us, it's the ideal environment for getting students' internal intellectual fires blazing.
Now, what happens? I can just hear the wheels going out there of all the parents who are listening, and they're thinking, okay, but what about all the qualifying tests that kids have to take, the SATs or high school exams or all this kind of stuff, where they have to actually regurgitate information or they're supposed to know things?
Well, in point of fact, I would sort of challenge that. I mean, there certainly are regurgitation tests, and some of the state standardized tests are just like that. But the SAT isn't that. For instance, the International Baccalaureate program isn't that. These are very much areas where you have to reason. You've got to take evidence support. You've got to use logic to decide, you know, which way you're going to move, which question you're going to choose. This notion of students presenting at the end of a course the answer to the essential question has the teacher who has been working with a student for the last 9 weeks seeing the final product, and the teacher then grades the student on how well they've presented, how well they've worked throughout the course in these various skills, and how well they handle the questions. That's an assessment which we interpret as authentic. And the reason is that there's no way the student can escape from that without having conveyed very clearly what they know and what they don't know, the skills they've mastered, the skills they haven't. If you compare something like that to a multiple choice assessment, well, I mean, right. A multiple choice is a question of, okay, you choose. There are four options here, and if you do it at random, you score 25%. Our kids do four times better on the SAT kind of examinations that come up than the national average. And that's, I think, because of the kind of training we give them. Although we don't train them in multiple choice tests, so that's the one part that I think they've got to do some extra work on before they take them.
What would you advise anxious parents, then, who want to stimulate their child's home environment with flashcards or computer programs or drills on material not in the curriculum and so on? These are parents who obviously are still concerned about mastering specific knowledge.
If you bring your child in, as I said earlier, as sort of a collaborative partner, then you can make that fun. You can flash the flashcards, and you can do this, and you can do that, and you can begin to move them. But first things first, I think you need that connectedness.
And making that, it fun rather than a whole anxious,
absolutely
pressured.
And it's so
program.
Easy to make it fun. And there's so many opportunities. There's having a child come in and helping cook. You know, measure out 2 cups of this, please. You know, 2.5 cups, 2 2/3. Wait a minute, is 2 2/3 the same as 2.6 or not? You know, I mean, giving them questions to solve, which if they hear you asking the questions, which you think are challenging, but you kind of expect them to be able to answer, they get the idea that, hey, I can probably do this. They're conveying this idea that I can do it. And then you can nudge them along if they need a little nudging along. That builds this good stuff right at the baseline inside.
I always think of trips to the grocery store.
Absolutely.
As huge opportunities.
Huge.
You know, which is the better bargain? Which do you think we should get? What about the vitamins in here? Looking on the box sides.
Absolutely.
And that's really for almost all ages. Because you can
It is all ages. Because you can just level that however you want to level it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about school success.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with John Potter, head of the New School of Northern Virginia, about school success. Yeah. When a student at the New School of Northern Virginia has a successful school experience, what does that involve?
We use a term, reimagining. And this is the way I view it. I see each person, child or adult, in this world. If you imagine their mind as a kind of sphere sort of around them, as they go through life, they pick up these ideas about themselves that may have come from their parents, may have come from teachers, may have come from fellow students, which catch them. They hear it and they retain it and they post it up on the perimeter of that sphere. And there are lots of these incidents in their lives, things they've heard, which somehow just take root. So each of us has, if you like, this array of post-its, which make up our sort of sense of ourselves as students. Reimagining is empowering a student to take some of those down and change them. The first thing that has to happen is they've got to say, I can be different. They've got to know that they can be different. They can change the things they want to change. And that involves some degree of sort of reflection too, which we encourage. But they rearrange them, they throw some out to put new ones up, and suddenly a student who came into the school, and this is a real example, seeing himself as a student who is a computer geek, a mathematician, but not particularly social. A year and a half later is the lead in a play that was written by the whole class, and comes away from that thinking, I'm an actor, you know? I'm not just a computer thing. I'm an actor. So, bam, this big post-it goes up. Actor, theater, this is great stuff. That would never have been there before.
Mm. That's such tremendous potential for growth that can be for the school environment.
And the good thing about it in the long term is that we imagine, you know, as a staff, that when that happens, it connects them a little closer to those fundamental things that really drive them.
So the thing that we can do for our children most, I guess, after giving them, obviously, affection, is giving them experiences that can broaden who they really are.
Absolutely. And to let them pursue those things in a non-judgmental way. We have an art teacher at the school who rarely tells students what to do. The students come into his class, they sit down, and he says, all I want you guys to do is draw. And what do you want us to draw? He said, I don't mind what you draw. Just draw. I'm here to help. So if you decide what you want to draw, I'll help you anytime you call for help. He said, I have two requirements, that you be here, that you not interfere with others, and you are working at it. And he produces incredible artist after incredible artist.
Because the kids have ownership of the material. They have ownership of the subject matter.
Right. A lot of parents are going to have questions, John, and we're going to be leaving them. As far as the New School of Northern Virginia goes, John, do you have a website you could offer our listeners?
We'd love to do that. It's long, so, you know, sharpen your pencils. That's right. www.nsnva, New School, Northern Virginia. nsnva.pvt. P as in Peter, V as in Victor, T as in
Tarzan.
Thank you. .k12.va, as in Virginia, .us. So I'll read the whole thing once quickly. Okay. www.nsnva.pvt.k12.va.us.
What kinds of resources would you recommend for those who want to learn more about what we've been discussing?
There is a book written by Tom Armstrong, which is Seven Kinds of Smart, which I think is a real good book to read. Daniel Goleman wrote a book about emotional intelligence. I've touched on those issues here and there, which I think is really worthwhile. It came out a few years ago. Ted Sizer has written a number of books, but the one I like a lot is Horace's School, which talks a lot about restructuring high schools with some of the goals that I've been talking about in mind. Parents are interested in looking for schools which embody the kinds of things I've been talking about. They could go to the website of the Coalition of Essential Schools, which is www.essentialschools.org.
Okay, you want to say that one more time? People are racing for pencils.
www.essentialschools, that's straight, no spacing, .org. Then for parents of younger students, there's a whole series of books on the responsive classroom, which they can look that up in Amazon or any other Barnes & Noble website. It's called the Responsive Classroom Series, which is very much in line with the kind of approach I've talked about with developing students' collaborative skills, self-esteem skills, confidence, organization, that kind of thing. And related to that, Teaching's Children to Care by Ruth Charney is also a good book to read.
And what is that about?
Same thing, responsive classroom ideas.
And I guess you better spell her last name. That's one.
C-H-A-R-N-E-Y, Ruth Charney.
That is a wonderful list. Thank you so much. These are all books that, in one way or another, parents should be able to get good information from. And we want to thank you, John Potter, for being with us today, because you have really helped a lot of parents see success in education in a different and, we hope, a very empowering way for their children. So
it's been a great pleasure.
Thank you. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. 791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 154. Also, tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.